The market doesn't joke around, so why would you? Get serious. Choose Tastytrade. Tastytrade gives you the tools you need to make smarter moves. Dig into data with advanced charting, track profit accurately with order chain trackers, see risk clearly with curve analysis, and trade with low-capped commissions, stocks, options, futures, and more. All on one platform. No wonder serious traders choose Tastytrade. Join the club, genius. Tasty Trading is a registered broker-dealer and member of FINRA and SIPC.
I'm Frank Holland, and you're listening to CNBC's Worldwide Exchange. Our show is live weekdays at 5 a.m. Eastern. Listen in. It is 5 a.m. here at CNBC Global Headquarters. I'm Frank Holland. Here is your 5 at 5. We start with breaking through records. Wall Street looking to close out its best week in months, but could reinflation fears put a dent in the recent record rally? One regulator, 16 AGs, and $113 billion wiped out in a single day. We take a closer look at Apple and the global antitrust crackdown closing in on Cupertino. Big day, big pop for shares of Reddit and Wall Street's first social media IPO since Pinterest. Is the stock? Is it a Facebook rival, the next red-hot AI play, or possibly something in between? Plus, could consumers be souring on athleisure as we watch Nike and Lululemon face heavy selling pressure ahead of the open? And later, Boeing's top customers are growing increasingly frustrated with the plane maker. They're now seeking a meeting without CEO David Calhoun. It's Friday, March the 22nd, 2024. You're watching Worldwide Exchange right here on CNBC. Good Friday morning. Welcome to Worldwide Exchange. Thanks so much for being with us. Let's get you ready for the trading day ahead. We pick up the hour with a check of U.S. stock futures with the Dow, the S&P, and the NASDAQ once again coming off fresh record closes. You can see Wall Street, the futures at least, looking like they're going to open up pretty strongly right now. The Dow looking like it would open up just about 35 points higher. The S&P and the NASDAQ firmly in the green. So the major average is also higher for the week. The Dow's on track for its best week since mid-December. The NASDAQ eyeing its best week since mid-January. However, there's one stock moving in the other direction. That's Apple, the U.S. Department of Justice. Now on the list of global regulators taking issue with the way that Apple does business. Apple coming off a more than 4% decline yesterday, losing $113 billion in market value. You see the sharp decline right here. For the week, Apple actually in the red, down more than 0.5%. The iPhone maker underperforming both the S&P and the NASDAQ as well. When you look at the year-to-date performance, you can see S&P up almost 10%. The NASDAQ 100 in this case up almost 9%. Apple deep in the red in this case as well. When you look at the year-to-date performance, down almost 11%. We also want to pay attention to the bond market this morning and taking a look. We're seeing the benchmark right now at 4.23%. We have seen a bit of easing in bond yields in recent days, something we'll continue to watch. Okay. That's our money set up right now. We want to continue the market conversation as investors assess whether stocks can continue hitting fresh record highs. Joining me now is Bill Stone, Chief Investment Officer at the Glenview Trust Company. Also, Aaron Gibbs, Chief Investment Officer at Main Street Asset Management. Good morning to both of you. Bill, I'm going to start off with you. Obviously, we've seen, you know, some record rallies, S&P and the NASDAQ breaking through to new records after the Jay Powell press conference and just kind of the assurance that we're going to get those three rate cuts. You're paying attention to financials in particular, both the KBW Bank ETF and also the regional bank ETF, both of them outperforming the S&P since Jay Powell's news conference. Why is that important in your mind? Is that a read on the markets or the economy?
I think it's both. So, you know, I think when you think about banks, right, is they are particularly sensitive to when the rate cuts are going to come. So, you know, anytime you see a movement in the thoughts on when the rate cuts will come, they rally, or, you know, the opposite if it gets pushed further out. The other part is obviously they're very economically sensitive. So I think both things in terms of, you know, when we saw the move from Powell that really the June cut is really still on the table, it really put, you know, gasoline on the fire of getting those going again. So I think, again, that you could see it in the market overall as well.
You know, a lot of confidence in that June cut, but there's questions about whether or not there's going to be actually three cuts this year. I was actually talking to KKR's chief investment strategist, Paula Campbell Roberts, this week. And that firm, even after the Jay Powell decision, said they only see two rate cuts this year. Aaron, I know you're in that camp as well. You're seeing only two rate cuts this year, but you're actually looking at a reacceleration of inflation, specifically when it comes to PPI. We're going to show the audience a chart of the month-to-month changes when it comes to PPI. So why do you think that's so meaningful, even after we heard Jay Powell basically say he's not as concerned about inflation?
Right. So I do think, unfortunately, that they are over-optimistic. When we look at the setup of where we are historically, there usually is a second wave of inflation, and that is often spurred by being a late cycle phenomena where we have tight inflation and tight commodities. And we have those two setups. On top of that, we have fuel to the fire with incredible fiscal spending. And we really are already looking at that, those tight commodities, and that's why I'm looking at that PPI, because that's what's concerning me. We've already seen these run-ups in metals, in energy, in cocoa. And so I think we really need to start paying attention to the signs that the economics are really telling us. And though the FOMC is trying to be optimistic and reassuring investors about those three cuts, I think as we go down that road, as if we're when we come to September, that they're going to have to start changing their tune.
You know, you're not the only person worried about reinflation and the risk connected to that. BlackRock's Rick Rieder, he was on CNBC yesterday, really focused on services inflation.
Right. Extremely.
Parts of the Fed's interest rate tool does not affect some of the heavy levels of inflation. You think about healthcare costs, education costs, insurance. So there's a dynamic, and part of why I think the Fed is right to say the last mile is hard, bringing down service inflation is very hard.
Aaron, apologies for that. I should let you know we're going to play that soundbite, but I'm going to come back to you. It sounds like you agree with the take that Rick Rieder has.
And if you combine that with the commodity tightness and reinflation that we've already seen on that side, and that is also in part to tight employment, I think that's going to be very difficult to overcome. And so when we're looking farther ahead, particularly when we look at those dot plots and expecting, you know, over the next 3 years, I think those are you know, almost Pollyanna-ish and just really unreasonable. And I think they should have been much more conservative from their last projections.
So, Bill, I'm going to come over to you. I know, again, you said you're confident we're going to get three rate cuts this year. But what do you think about Rick Rieder's take on the idea of services inflation being stickier?
Yeah, no, I think that's the absolute biggest fear. You know, Chair Powell kind of waved it away and said, you know, the labor market's more in balance. And I do think, it's fair to say if there's any risk, it's that continues to bleed through to the overall inflation rate and won't allow it to us to get those cuts. So I think that is a completely fair thing and what you really, as an investor, should watch the closest.
All right. So, Aaron, I'm going to get back to you. We're almost out of time, but very quickly, you're, Aaron, a bit of a contrarian. You're actually worried about a possible recession going forward, and you're making some defensive plays. You're looking at tips and also gold. Gold trading pretty close to an all-time high right now. Why are you so bullish on these very defensive plays when we're seeing the market broaden out and a lot of people feeling very bullish about the outlook on things?
Well, it's really more just a contrary play. It's not necessarily that I see a recession. It's just that these are the plays that do very well when we have to do that readjustment and wake up and say, hey, there's going to be a second wave, which we have seen multiple times in history when you look at inflation waves. And so I think there are opportunities in gold, in industrial metals, and even in tips. Particularly when you look at tips early in the cycle, those are the ways to hedge and save your capital preservation.
Bill, I'm going to give you the last word. Agree with these? She calls them contrarian plays. I think some people would also see gold specifically as a defensive play. Agree, disagree?
You know, I may not tilt that far. I do think you have to maybe lean into some more of the less cyclical areas, staples, other things, just because the market seems so sure that there's no recession. Market's probably right about no recession, I think, but, you know, it's really been priced in that there'll be no recession. So I think maybe there's more opportunity, maybe leaning a little away from that.
All right. Bill Stone, Aaron Gibbs, great to see you both. Thank you very much. Have a great day.
Thank you.
And for more on what's driving the markets in the day ahead, head over to CNBC Pro at cnbc.com/pro for exclusive insights and analysis. All right, time now for a quick check on some of this morning's top corporate stories. Bertha Coombs is here with those. Bertha, good morning and happy Friday.
Hey. Happy Friday, Frank. We're watching shares of Reddit after its blockbuster debut on the New York Stock Exchange yesterday, closing up 48% after pricing at the very top of the range and opening at $47 a share. Reddit and select shareholders raising about $750 million in the offering, giving the company an $8 billion valuation. This was the first major social media IPO since Pinterest way back in 2019. And if it's any indication, shares of Pinterest are up more than 80% since its debut. Elizabeth Warren is once again calling on the SEC to investigate Tesla, its CEO Elon Musk, and its board of directors over what the Massachusetts senator calls, quote, possible misappropriation of resources and conflicts of interest stemming from Musk's dual roles at Tesla and social media platform X. Warren first expressed similar concerns back in July, but this time adds new concerns that recent evidence suggests Tesla's board lacks independence from Musk and is not operating the best interest of shareholders. And major airline CEOs, including American Airlines, United, Southwest, and Alaska, reportedly plan to speak with Boeing chairman Larry Kellner in meetings that will not include company CEO David Calhoun. According to the Wall Street Journal, the group plans to express concerns over that Alaska Airlines MAX 9 blowout and the company's post-crisis response. A Wall Street analyst saying the decision to hold meetings without Calhoun does not appear to be a good sign for the CEO's longevity at the company, Frank. Certainly unusual.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's take a look. Share since that Alaska Air blowout down more than 20%. Bertha, thank you very much. We're going to see you later in the show. All right, a lot more to come here on Worldwide Exchange, including the one word that investors have to know today. But first, one of the world's most valuable companies is under siege from regulators, and our Jim Cramer, he's going to give us his take on shares of Apple. Plus, looking ahead to Reddit's second day as a publicly traded company, and if it's set to pop to follow the path of Facebook and Alphabet, or if we're looking at another Snapchat in the making. And then later, Nike and Lululemon facing a consumer spending squeeze as both shares get hit hard in the pre-market. A very busy hour still ahead when Worldwide Exchange returns.
What does it mean to be rich? Maybe it's less about reaching a magic number and more about discovering the magic in life. At Edward Jones, our dedicated financial advisors are the people you can count on for financial strategies that help support a life you love. Because the key to being rich is knowing what counts. Learn more about our comprehensive approach to planning at edwardjones.com/findyourrich. Edward Jones, member SIPC.
Canva presents stories to keep you up at night. It was an ordinary work day until
the Singapore presentation is at
3 a.m.
The office was shocked.
That's when we sleep.
Maya made it less scary with Canva.
I'll just record my presentation so Singapore can watch it anytime.
Record and present anytime with Canva presentations at canva.com. Designed for work.
All right, welcome back to Worldwide Exchange. You got two of your big money movers of the morning. We're talking Nike and Lululemon, shares of both retailers, as you can see right now, under some pressure as growth continues to slow. For Nike, it's all about a lack of demand in China, the company's $2 billion restructuring plan also being offset by higher markdowns and reduced benefits from its channel mix. A similar demand picture for Lululemon is customers, they gravitate towards experiences over goods. It's also cutting guidance as it deals with tough year-over-year comparisons. Joining me now with a deeper dive into the quarter is Aneesha Sherman, Vice President in U.S. Apparel and Specialty Retail at AB Bernstein. Aneesha, good morning. Thank you for joining us.
Morning.
All right, so looking at shares of both companies under pressure, but in all fairness, they're two pretty different businesses. If you don't mind, I want to start with Nike. So if you look at any report, everybody's saying it's all about weakness in China, but I kind of dove into the numbers. So China sales 5% higher year over year. They did decline compared to 2022, but 8% higher than 2021. So the China weakness, that story, are we making too big of a deal out of it, or is it really the big deal that everybody's saying it is?
No, so the China issue for Nike is more of a China issue than a Nike issue. You know, China demand overall is softening. China retail sales were only up mid-single digits last year, and this year they've softened even further. But Nike, within the context of China, is doing fine. Nike's actually gaining share versus other global competitors, as well as Chinese local brands. And retailers like Nike, consumers like Nike. It's just in a tough macro environment. So I don't worry about Nike in China. I think China macro is weak, just like Europe macro is weak, and Nike declined in Europe this quarter. But the brand is strong in both markets, and as the macro environments improve, so will Nike sales.
Yeah, I talked to a couple other analysts. They said something similar to what you're saying, is that, you know, the numbers are a little bit softer, but that's not really Nike's big issue. What people are pointing to as their big issue is, quote unquote, innovation, which is a little bit more nebulous, harder to put a finger on. So they are facing some competition from rising competitors, Hoka and On Running. They're also losing some shelf space that really attracts younger buyers because they're focusing on their direct-to-consumer channel. But we always say innovation. What does that exactly mean? I mean, are they going to come out with another Nike Air or a Nike Gel? I mean, what is the innovation everybody's looking for?
So in the last few years, Nike has not come out with anything new or different. Even if you look at the launches that they've done, say, take the Pegasus, right, the women's running shoe. If you look at, they're on their 40th iteration of Pegasus now. And if you look at the last six of them, they look really similar. And so when consumers are seeing Pegasus 38 and Pegasus 39 and Pegasus 40, and they all look really similar, they kind of lose interest in the brand. And some of these newer brands you're talking about are bringing out, you know, not necessarily the world's fastest carbon plate, but different silhouettes, different colors, different looks and feels, and consumers want that.
All right, so it's not necessarily innovation. It's just maybe marketing, styling. I mean, people are just looking for something different. As you mentioned, the Pegasus, a really popular running shoe, looking similar year after year after year. I want to switch over to Lululemon. Opposite story in China. I saw huge growth in China, but that weaker guidance seems to be really weighing on the stock. One thing that I noticed, though, they really appear to be maintaining their pricing power, actual margin expansion. So when we look at Lululemon, what's really the issue? Is the issue that consumers don't like the brand as much, or are they simply shifting their spend?
The issue for Lululemon is the U.S. The U.S. is their biggest market, and they are the biggest women's apparel market share holder in the U.S. Not just sports apparel, but women's apparel. So they're huge in the U.S. And for a market leader to keep growing and outgrowing the market becomes increasingly difficult as they get bigger. And there are newer competitors here that are trying to take share and that are smaller and able to grow faster. And so it's a question of law of large numbers combined with a softening macro. And it's a slowdown that was due to catch up with Lululemon at some point, and it finally has.
Okay. Your price target on Lululemon, $430. Right now it's trading at about 418. So you do see some upside in the company. Anisha Sherman, good to see you. Thank you very much. All right, coming up here on Worldwide Exchange, shares of FedEx higher despite missing revenue estimates for an eighth quarter in a row. How the global shipping giant is wooing investors this morning.
Welcome to the Canva guided meditation for stress at work. Impending deadline? Generate Canva presentations in seconds.
So
brainstorm got too big? Ooh. Summarize with AI in a click. Writer's block? Release with Canva Magic Write.
Magical.
Stress less and save time at canva.com. Designed for work.
Canva.
Welcome back to Worldwide Exchange. Time now for your big money movers. We're going to start off with shares of FedEx jumping right now. Up over 12% after the company raised guidance despite a difficult demand environment. FedEx says it will continue to trim spending and plans to buy back $5 billion in shares. For the quarter, revenue did fall by 2%. It's six year-over-year decline in a row and also came in slightly below analyst estimates. This was FedEx's eighth straight quarterly sales miss. Again, shares up just over 12%. China's Hang Seng Tech Index dropping more than 4% thanks to a double-digit decline in shares of Li Auto. The stock is on track for its worst month since October of 2022 after the EV maker cut its first quarter delivery forecast. Other Chinese EV makers moving lower in sympathy, including NIO and XPeng. And Accenture regaining some ground after posting its worst day since June of 2013. The IT and consulting giant is cutting full-year guidance as clients continue to face economic uncertainty and pull back their spending. Shares are still up more than 35% over the past year, but is now on pace for its worst month since December of 2022. Right now in the pre-market, shares of Accenture up just about 0.5%. All right, now turning to the latest developments around Apple. Shares looking to recover some ground this morning after sliding 4% yesterday, shedding $113 billion in market value after the Department of Justice unveiled its antitrust case against the tech giant. The DOJ calling Apple's iPhone ecosystem a monopoly that it says drove its astronomical valuation at the expense of consumers, developers, and rival phone makers. Apple disputing the suit, saying it plans to fight it. On last night's Mad Money, Jim Cramer saying, despite the global regulator siege on the company, he is not giving up on Apple.
I know a loser case when I see one. And the United States of America versus Apple is a loser. The decision by the Justice Department to go against Apple will end up like any of the myriad analysts who've gone from buy to hold on Apple stock during my time. It's creating still one more buying opportunity because the regulators, they ain't got nothing for you.
All right, for much more, let's bring in Alex Kantrowitz, big technology founder and a CNBC contributor. Alex, always great to see you.
Great to see you, Frank.
All right, so Jim Cramer, he thinks kind of a nothing burger. He thinks it's actually a buying opportunity. We also had some other insight. Former assistant AG for antitrust, Bill Baer, on our air yesterday, saying these cases, they can take years and years to unfold. I want to get your perspective. Beyond the short-term stock pressure, how do you see this impacting Apple's stock and its overall business?
This is going to be a multi-year headache for Apple. There's no doubt about that. These cases, they wind through the justice system, and they require the companies to disclose lots of information, which is going to come to the public. Scrutiny on their business, it will take off some of the marketing sheen that Apple has done so well to show that it's on the side of consumers. Well, maybe it's not exactly totally on our side. And there's going to be, you know, there might be a place where Apple says we have to settle, and that could cause further problems.
All right, so you think there may be a chance they could settle again. You're in the same camp. You think this is going to take years and years. I've heard some people say the DOJ is pretty much throwing the kitchen sink at Apple. They're kind of just going after everything. Merrick Garland getting very granular during that press conference. I was a bit surprised, referencing the color of text bubbles, the quality of videos that you're sending your friends, and just kind of the feelings you have when you don't have the right text bubble. Got very granular for a minute. How do you see Apple fighting back when the DOJ is kind of not only going after their business practices, but consumer sentiment, I mean, feelings? It's kind of a wide range complaint here from the DOJ and these other AGs.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, I was surprised to see Merrick Garland bring up, I think was part of the weakest part of this case, which is the green bubble thing. I mean, what has Apple done by locking in users on Apple Messages? It's given way to the rise of WhatsApp, which shows that competition is healthy. And that's how I think Apple is going to fight back here. They're going to say that competition is healthy, that they're not the only phone in the game, right? The DOJ had to make up this a new category of performance smartphones that got it to saying that Apple 70% of the market. Well, that only bumped up 5% from the 65% of the market that they have without this new category. Of course, Android is a real competitor. And Apple will say, listen, there is choice in the market. If developers don't want to work with us, they can work with Android, but they keep coming back because they're making money here. Same with consumers. If their policies are so bad that they're making the product worse, then why do consumers keep buying? That will be the defense.
Alex, I want to also touch on one other big tech story from yesterday. Microsoft unveiling its new line of services that are going to be powered with AI. Gartner put out a report believing their forecast, I should say, that 22% of PCs sold this year are going to be AI PCs. What's your take on this announcement from Microsoft? Big deal, little deal, or AI PCs really the next big thing?
Well, I think the marketing is going to look really great. You know, I watched the introduction video. There's a button that you can hit and you get Copilot on the side. And I said, you know what? I want that computer. But then I remembered, hey, listen, I have a pretty good and functional Apple MacBook and I like it. And so I think that's really going to be the case with the first wave of AI PCs and AI, quote unquote, AI devices. It's going to be more marketing than muscle. It's going to make you want it in the commercial. But when it comes down to what functionality that you're going to actually go for with the device you buy, I don't think it's going to make such a huge difference.
Yeah, Gartner also added it's going to be harder to get business companies to spend more on these AI PCs when they already have functional PCs in the office already. Alex Kantrowitz, really great to see you as always. Thank you for your time and for your insight. Also, be sure to catch a first on CNBC interview with the head of the DOJ's antitrust division, Jonathan Kantner, talking much more about the agency's Apple lawsuit. That is coming up on Squawk Box at 8:20 a.m. Eastern. And as we had to break, a check on the price of gold trading right around $21.68 an ounce. Aaron Gibbs earlier Just saying right now is a good time to buy gold. Right now you see gold trading just below its all-time high. And for CNBC Pro members, hedge fund manager and Livermore Partners Chief Investment Officer David Neuhauser says there's much more room for this metal to run this year. Also offering three under-the-radar stocks he recommends buying right now to play that precious metal rally. Among those is Coeur Mining, a consistent underperformer, he says, could outperform over the next few years and even start paying a dividend. For his other two names, head over to CNBC.com/pro right now. We're back right after this. And welcome back to Worldwide Exchange. I'm Frank Holland. Let's get you ready for the trading day ahead. We pick up the half an hour with the check of U.S. stock futures with the Dow, the S&P, and the NASDAQ all coming off fresh record high closes. Take a look right now. You see Wall Street looks like it's going to start the day in the green. The Dow looks like it would open up just about 45 points higher. And as the markets continue to test new highs, so do a number of companies. Our CNBC data team, they crunch the numbers. 114 S&P 500 stocks are now at 52-week or all-time highs. That includes Dow components Disney, Amazon, and Home Depot. You can see Amazon up just about 0.5% right now. Home Depot fractionally higher. We're also looking at some other companies, Walmart, American Express. You see the list here on the board. Goldman Sachs, J.P. Morgan, Travelers, Visa, Caterpillar, Microsoft, and just behind them, 234 other names are within 5% of hitting their own fresh records. This morning, we're also looking at the bond market right now. We're seeing a bit of an easing in bond yields over the last couple of days. The benchmark right now at 4.23%. We'll continue to talk about and watch bond yields throughout the mornings. All right, that was your morning money setup. Now we want to turn our attention back over to stocks. It is time now for this month's Sectornomics. We're looking at communication services, which is hitting fresh highs and is the top performer in the S&P this week. Dom Chu joins us with what's behind the big gains. Which companies are leading the way? Dom, good morning.
Maybe no surprise, Frank, that it's the two biggest ones out there in terms of social media. It's Meta Platforms, the parent company of Facebook and Instagram, as well as Alphabet, the parent company of Google. If you take a look at the performance overall from that communication services sector, it has been a leader, one of the top two best performing sectors over the course of the past year. The other one being technology. And a lot of the reason has been some of those mega cap names, as I mentioned. If you take a look at the overall reason why, check out just how much of an impact those two stocks have had overall with regard to the sector's performance. If you look at the picture that we're showing behind you right now, the market value of the sector overall has really moved from about $2.6 trillion a year ago to roughly $4 trillion today. And the weighting in the S&P 500 was about just about 8% a year ago. It's 9% now. It makes it the fifth biggest sector in the S&P 500. Now, I mentioned those two stocks, Meta Platforms and what's happening with Alphabet. Take a look at the impact there on some of those names within the sector. If you look at the performance, Meta Platforms has been a massive performer, up about 150% in that time. Alphabet's up about 40% during that time. And the reason why you care about this is because if you take a look at the sector overall, those people who invest in there, take a look at the real impact some of the other stocks in the industry have on this overall weighting of the companies. They are so overwhelmed, this sector, by those two stocks that even with a decline, the likes of Paramount down 42% and Warner Brothers Discovery down 40% over the year, all it takes is a move higher by some of these mega cap names to really negate any kind of real impact there. So, Frank, it really is communication services, very much just about Meta Platforms and Alphabet with regard to performance. The storylines, of course, differ. I'll send things back over to you.
All right, Dom, thank you very much for this month's Sectornomics. And as Dom mentioned, companies classified as internet content and information providers, they make up the bulk of the weighting in the communication services sector. Meta has been far and away the big winner in the sector, up more than 40%. But another new name to investors could potentially be added to this index, at least at some point down the road. That's Reddit. The social media platform enjoying the fruits of its IPO yesterday, jumping nearly 50% in its first day of trading. Investors are now trying to figure out what Reddit's future holds, whether it's the next Meta or the next Alphabet, with advertising, e-commerce, and AI fueling just really tremendous growth. Or is it more like a Snap, which was projected to be, by some, a Meta killer, but has since struggled mightily? Let's talk much more about this now with Sarah Kuntz, founding and managing director at Clio Capital. Sarah, always great to see you. Good morning.
Good morning.
All right, so I want to get your perspective. So according to Insider Analytics, there's a $1 trillion global market for digital advertising, but three big names, Meta, we just talked about them, Amazon and Alphabet, they get up just about half of that. So where does a Reddit fit in all this? Can they really just get significant market share? And also, where do you stand on their data licensing for AI and large language models, that business case?
Yeah, I think that that business case, we'll start there, right? That's tough. You know, remember a few quarters ago where Papa John's was saying, hey, we're an AI company now, right? So the reality is that AI moves markets right now in a good direction. But a lot of these companies that are saying it, it doesn't necessarily make sense. You know, Alphabet did that deal with them. That'll be interesting to see where it goes. But the reality is $60 million to Alphabet is a very small amount of money. And a lot of that data just isn't particularly proprietary and isn't super helpful in training those LLMs. And so I don't know that they're going to be an AI data business. You know, their CEO is saying, hey, don't look at us as just an AI data business because we might never be that. I think they're an ad business, and it's an ad business that's struggled a little bit because the content isn't always super brand safe. And they've not really found sort of the magic of a really high value ad unit. So certainly there are lots of devoted Redditors who are active every day, but I don't know how quickly that's going to turn to a profitable ad business.
Okay, that's a fair argument. By the way, I don't think the audience was expecting you to bring up Papa John's as a at least they thought they were an AI play. I do want to focus on the digital ad spend. Obviously, that's a big part of the business for a Meta and an Alphabet and, of course, an Amazon. They get about half, again, of that $1 trillion in global digital ad spend. So can Reddit capture it? And if so, how do they capture it in your mind?
They'll continue to capture some of it, but it's tough, right? There are certain subreddits where it makes a ton of sense. I was looking at, don't judge me, a subreddit around loading the dishwasher the other day because I am very bad at it. That's something that if you sell dish detergent, you want to advertise against that subreddit, right?
We're judging you, by the way.
Yeah. How much does that scale, though? And so I think that's really the question. I think there are areas like movie premieres where it makes a ton of sense. You have these active, thriving fan communities, these fandoms. And so there will be areas where it makes sense. But at scale, we still haven't seen advertisers jump ship from the Twitters, now X's of the world, over to other platforms that are a little bit edgier and riskier like Reddit.
All right. So just to put it in context, by the way, according to Insider, Reddit does get about 1% of the global digital ad spend, but, you know, obviously a very small portion compared to those giants. I think the last question is, Reddit obviously has a big community, including the Wall Street Bets community, things like that. Is the community, is that a factor when you're looking at the stock? Do you think those retail traders that did the whole, you know, Reddit revolution or whatever you want to call it a few years ago, do you think they can actually help power this stock higher?
They can, but, you know, they can also take it the other way. I think that Wall Street Bets, they mentioned it in their S-1. It is a blessing and a curse for them. I lurk on that subreddit, I'll admit. But I think that it's dangerous. I think the community is what drives them. They say they're a community company. That is very much true. The reality just is that we have no idea how the public markets value a community company.
All right, Sarah Kuntz. People came for your insight. They stayed for the judgment. Dishwasher Reddit? I mean, come on, Sarah. You got better stuff to do than that. Thanks for being here. All right, coming up, lawmakers racing to get a funding deal done before midnight tonight as we head to the nation's capital with the latest on whether Congress will be able to avoid a shutdown. Stay with us. All right, welcome back to Worldwide Exchange. Time now for your morning call sheet. We start with JP Morgan upgrading its rating and price target on Best Buy, moving it to overweight and $101 per share. J.P. Morgan saying deflationary headwinds for the retailer, they should moderate in the second half of the year. Redburn Atlantic upgrading its rating on Verizon to neutral. It cites improving subscriber trends, exposure to falling rates, and healthy dividend cover. And UBS raising its price target on NVIDIA from $800 to $1,100 per share. UBS saying on the back of the Blackwell launch, NVIDIA sits on the brink of an entirely new wave of demand on a global scale. All right, time now for your global briefing. Chinese authorities, they are reportedly investigating PwC's role in Evergrande's accounting practices after the property developer was accused of a $78 billion fraud. PwC resigned as Evergrande's auditor last year due to disagreements over his 2021 auditing practices. Earlier this week, Evergrande's chairman was accused of inflating revenue by more than 75%. He's also been banned from the financial markets for life. The Nikkei ending the day higher after briefly touching a new record of 41,000. This follows fresh inflation data from that country showing the headline rate for February at 2.8%, up just over a half a percent from the previous month. The Bank of Japan says it's confident it can reach its 2% inflation target after ending negative interest rates this week. And Vodafone has 5 days to provide, quote unquote, meaningful solutions for concerns around its proposed merger with rival CK Hutchison before the UK's Competition and Markets Authority launches an investigation. The CMA says the deal could lead to significantly less competition, higher prices for consumers, and an unfavorable environment for mobile network operators. All right, turning our attention now to Washington, D.C., back here in the U.S. The race is on for Congress to get that government funding package over the finish line. Lawmakers have until midnight tonight to approve the legislation and avoid a partial government shutdown. Emily Wilkins joins us now with the very latest. Emily, good morning. Is Congress, are they going to get this done in time?
Frank, that is going to be the question of the day. So right now, the House is on track to pass this $1.2 trillion package to fund the government for the rest of the fiscal year. But the vote that's expected this morning is probably going to have some road bumps in it. Certain Republicans have slammed the bill as not doing enough for the border and funding programs that support transgender individuals or pro-abortion programs like allowing service members to travel out of state to receive an abortion. One of the top Republicans on the committee that oversees the funding bills, he announced last night that he would vote no after senators added funding for facilities providing abortions and creating social services for immigrants. Congressman Robert Adderholt said in a statement that, quote, the Senate must respect the work of the House, and in good conscience, I cannot and will not vote for these projects or this bill. Now, Democrats have also raised concern about the bill ending funding for a United Nations program to assist Palestinian refugees. So you got issues kind of on both sides here. Now, two-thirds of the House are going to be needed to support this bill for it to pass. And right now, passage is expected, but it could get close. And then, of course, once the House goes this morning, you still have the Senate. They have yet to reach an agreement to shorten the debate to pass the bill before midnight tonight. And if they don't come to an agreement, we could see a short shutdown going into the weekend. Now, with the 2024 fiscal year halfway done, lawmakers have already started to turn to the next tranche of spending bills for fiscal year 2025. This includes House Republicans making early moves on a budget and, of course, the White House putting out their $7.3 trillion funding request. So the package being voted on today, as well as the one last week, it's going to fund the government until October 1st of this year. And then, Frank, we're going to get to do this all again.
We might get to do this all again, assuming things go correctly. But you did mention one possibility of a short shutdown. Even a short one, do you see it having an impact on some of the services that people really rely on from the government?
Not really. I mean, shutdowns tend to get more impact. They tend to impact Americans more the longer that they go on. Most agencies do have some contingency plans. They can keep up with some of their most basic services. And over the weekend, you don't have any federal employees that are furloughed. And so the impact is really minimal. And when I talk with lawmakers, they say, look, no shutdown is the best shutdown. But they're not as worried if they have a shutdown on Saturday or Sunday, so long as it is resolved by Monday, because that is when the impacts really begin to kick in.
No shutdown is the best shutdown. Didn't think I'd ever hear that phrase. Emily Wilkins, live in D.C. Always great to see you. Great reporting as always. All right, turn our attention now to a market flash. We're watching shares of Tesla. Bloomberg reporting the company is trimming its output of cars in China amid slower EV sales growth and intense competition in that country. Tesla produces Model 3s and Model Ys in China. You can see right now shares of Tesla down just about 2.5%. All right, coming up, the one word that every investor needs to know today, plus the stock that's high on our next guest shopping list, up nearly 20% this week. We're going to give you that name and show you what our mystery chart is coming up after the break. And as CNBC celebrates Women's Heritage Month, we're sharing the stories of some of our newly named CNBC changemakers, an annual list of 50 women who are innovating and transforming business. As we head to break, here is Fannie Mae CEO Priscilla Alma Dobal.
To me, a change maker is someone who sees an opportunity to make things better. I've also been told that for real change, you have to accept that it doesn't have to be perfect, but don't let perfection be the enemy of the good. And I remind myself that life is fleeting, and when you get the chance to affect change, you should move with real urgency.
All right, welcome back to Worldwide Exchange. Time now for your WEX wrap-up. We start with Elizabeth Warren calling on the SEC to investigate Tesla, CEO Elon Musk, and the board of directors over what she calls possible misappropriation of resources and conflicts of interest. Major airline CEOs, including American, United, Southwest, and Alaska, they reportedly plan to speak with Boeing chairman Larry Kellner over that Alaska Airlines door plug incident, that conversation without CEO David Calhoun. Shares of FedEx, they're popping this morning after the company raised 2024 guidance despite a difficult demand environment. It's also optimistic about improved profitability as it continues to cut costs. FedEx also authorizing a $5 billion share buyback. A very different story for Nike and Lululemon. Shares of both retailers under some pressure on concerns about growth in North America and in China. Apple looking to recover some of yesterday's losses, where it shed $113 billion in market value after the Department of Justice unveiled an antitrust case against the company. And Medicare says heart patients insured under the program will now be covered for Novo Nordisk weight loss drug Wegovy as long as it's prescribed to reduce the risk of heart attacks and strokes. Earlier this month, the FDA approved the drug for overweight adults without diabetes. We're getting you ready for this trading day ahead with U.S. stock futures taking a look in the green across the board right now. It looks like the Dow, it would open up just about 40 points higher right now. The S&P and the Nasdaq also firmly in the green, all three coming off record closing highs. Let's now bring in Pivotal Advisors Tiffany McGee. She's also a CNBC contributor. Tiffany, good morning. Always good to see you.
Good morning, Frank.
So want to get a sense of how you see the day shaping up ahead. Again, coming off record closes for the Dow, the S&P and the Nasdaq. What's your WEX word of the day?
So my WEX word of the day is consistent. And by the way, it seems like every time I'm on, where the market is hitting new highs. So I think that I'm a good luck charm. So we should keep that up. Yeah. So listen, my WEX word of the day is consistent. And so as in, you know, the Fed has been consistent with their message around inflation, growth, and policy. And, you know, what they've said is they really need to see data that supports movement, sustainable movement towards that 2% inflation target. And we're just not there yet. But what I think the market is responding to is Powell did say, really indicate that, you know, strong job growth alone is not enough to delay the rate cuts, right? So that dot plot is still kind of indicating three rate cuts. You know, I think some of this is baked into the market, but this rate cut optimism, I know that you talked about this at the top of the show, is really kind of providing a tailwind to the market. And we think that's going to continue.
All right, so you think it's providing a tailwind. You said cuts. You were very you were emphasizing the plural there. So how important?
Oh, I'm sorry.
No. Yeah. You're right.
Yeah.
No,
rate cuts.
The Fed indicated cuts.
I'm sorry,
three cuts. Yeah. No, you don't have to apologize. How important is it that we get three cuts or multiple cuts? I was telling earlier, I was talking to KKR's chief investment strategist, Paula Campbell Roberts. That firm believes, even after the Jay Powell news conference, that we might only get two cuts. Do we need all three of the cuts? Could one cut keep this market rally going?
I'm not sure about one cut, but I think what the market is really responding to is the fact that we are going to have some cuts, right? So when we think about, you know, what we've been going through over the past year, and actually a little bit longer, is we've been really, you know, there's been so much stress around the rate increases. And so now we're finally to that point where we know we're going to see some cuts. So I really don't think that the difference between two or three cuts is going to make a huge difference. But right now, you know, we're kind of headed into that second quarter, and that optimism still really is fueling the market growth. And we think that's going to continue. One versus three, I'm not sure. It really depends on when we find out that information.
Yeah, I think we're all trying to figure that out. I want to get to your picks. One of them is Micron, a big earnings mover this week. You actually had Micron as a pick the last time you came on before earnings, so kudos to you.
I did.
Stocks run up big this week, kind of seen as an AI play. In your mind, would you still buy into it now, even after this big run-up? Do you think it has more room to run on this AI story?
Well, I think people should really watch the show and should have been watching 2 weeks ago when I talked about Micron, because when they dropped earnings the other day, shares were up 17% in pre-market on Thursday morning alone. So that's a great plug for the show. However, you know, I really do think comparatively speaking, compared to like an Nvidia, for instance, you know, Micron is still a better priced stock. But again, there, you know, you have to own these chip makers if you really have consistent conviction, right? Around these AI plays, and it really is in the chip space. So I do like Micron, not necessarily in addition to Nvidia or as an alternative.
Okay. In all fairness, Tiffany, you also always advocate for Lululemon. Stock's taking a bit of a dip right now. In your mind, is this a buying opportunity, or do you think there's something fundamentally going on with their business long term?
So I think it's both, right? So you know that I love Lulu, and not only am I a studier of Lulu, a student of Lulu, right? But I'm also a Lulu customer. And so even before the earnings report came out, I could definitely tell, like, that Lulu has, you know, when I look at Lulu and Nike and what Lulu has been able to do, you know, Lulu has really, you know, they're losing some of that magic. So America's growth is slowing, but their Asian
growth is Tiffany McGee. Hey, Lululemon fan, great to see you. Have a great weekend. That's going to do it for us. You've been listening to CNBC's Worldwide Exchange. You can always catch us live weekdays at 5 a.m. Eastern.
At Capella University, you'll get support from people who care about your success. From before you enroll to after you graduate, pursue your goals knowing help is available when you need it. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu.